My life, what were you given for?
Тема
the topic, our topic was defined not by me, of course, but by Александр Сергеевич Пушкин, whom we know from the very beginning of our studies. Did you pay attention when he wrote this? What are these lines about? Do you feel how his soul, what was the state of his soul? The life is a gift, but what does he write? A vain gift, a random gift. Yes, a person was born. Life, what were you given for? Please keep the microphone closer, but I can bite it off. If I keep it too close, this is dangerous. I'm always very afraid of the microphone being too close, and I warn. Really? He asked a question, and not just he thought about it, but this question has been asked by everybody. Many of people think about it at the early age, and the others keep living and never think of it. There are two types of people. They are very interestingly divided into these two groups. Imagine the situation. A ship has a hole in the bottom. Everybody finds out about it. What should we do? And I'm sure that 99% will answer me. I'm sure they will say, we should get saved. Oh, it is so unwise on your part. Get saved? No. While the ship is sinking, it takes time, of course, the holes are not so large. Meanwhile, we saw that my cabin is not so good and his one is better. He has a lot in his cabin and I don't have so much, and there are many things in his cabin, gold, silver, jewelry. Here, what's happening? It's an amazing thing. Instead of looking for means of salvation, they start stealing and robbery. We start going to other cabins and doing this. A vain gift, a random gift. My life, what were you given for? What is life? Everybody is born. How? We all know. Everybody knows that my ship is not so good. I'm sure that my ship will sink in the same way as the ship of all the people sink. There are no immortal people on earth. And it will happen to everybody. And when this ship turns over, I don't know. With some people it happens in early youth and some keep living, but it doesn't matter how long. Nobody knows when this ship will turn over. We do not know this. And in face of this evident reality, absolutely evident reality, we shouldn't be so smart to understand that everybody is mortal. And this gift, I don't know what I have it for. And this question requires an answer. And we see two types of people. For some people, there is no question at all. They live the life the way it goes. A person doesn't even think what they're living for. They lead a plant and animal way of life, plus some aesthetic moments, of course. But like a plant or an animal, they are living here in this horizontal way of existence, and they do not think about the sense of life. And of course, they have no questions that all the mankind has been asking itself throughout the history from times immemorial. We all know this. Those who started in philosophy faculties, and not just these people, know that the question of the sense of existence has always been there, and different philosophic systems have been trying to solve it in different ways. Please take a look at the Russian, European, ancient Greek, Hindu philosophy, and we see different options. What are they? Mostly they are two. One option that was present throughout the history of the mankind, and I will tell you why. How we found out about this. One option is that nobody ever doubted that a person as a being doesn't just have this short moment of life that is ongoing in this body. Nobody could ever believe that the personality could be destroyed with the bodily death. Throughout the history, all the mankind believed in God. Not a single tribe was ever found that was atheistic. Many interesting historians of religion, philosophers, and other specialists speak of it. Not a single tribe was ever found that was atheistic. Some people thought they were not very smart, they couldn't explain some natural patterns. That's, in this connection, I often remember the case when the academic Павлов was crossed himself in front of the church, and there was a sailor who thought of him, oh, how he is not clever. Never did the mankind doubt that the personality is indestructible. They tried to understand this, to realize it. They made some special systems of religious life, systems of thought. This was the kind the mankind lived. We can even say that the religious life has never stopped, and it hasn't stopped yet. And even now, even according to any statistics, more than half of the mankind lives with the religious idea. The sense of life is solved in the following way. There is the eternal existence of a person. The personality is indestructible. There is moral responsibility and accountancy for my earthly life where I am free in front of good and evil. I am free here. I can live, think, feel, speak, and as long as is possible, act in the way I think is good. I don't see the eternity here. I see neither God nor devil here, neither paradise nor hell. I am free. But frankly speaking, in my soul, something tells me something. There is a conscience. There are some moral feelings. And they remind me of something all the time. But this type of people, we can even call it the type of people who cannot calm down without having solved the issue of the sense of personal life. We see so many amazing people in our people, in our culture, of our thought, who couldn't calm down till they answered the question asked by Alexander Pushkin. As an example, I can tell you about Dostoevsky, who said, he wrote about himself. He wrote that my doubts, really, if there is something or if there is nothing, they went through the crucible. My belief, my faith went through the crucible. I don't believe as a boy. It would be funny to speak of Dostoevsky, that he could believe as a child.
take a look at how so many different people went looking for the truth. They were at different educational, social levels. We can understand them very well. Of course, if there is the eternity and God, and the personality is indestructible, I can understand why we should be good, what is good and what is evil. If they objectively exist, or maybe it just seems to me, I understand the sense of all my activities, work, everything I do, the sense of life in general. Another category of people, as I already mentioned, they do not care about it. And it's so sad that starting especially from the second half of the 18th century, when there were French enlighteners who were very active, and the Enlightenment, epoch of Enlightenment came, and these people were not scientists of the natural science, they were just philosophers, and they told, there is no God. And not only God, but many other things that it is ridiculous to speak of them now. They said there that Jesus Christ never ever existed, that it is a myth, and the greatest historians of the past, as Tacit, Iosif Flavi, Pliny the Junior, those people who wrote about the events of those times, not to mention the authors of the New Testament. I just speak of the historians who hated Christianity. They wrote about Jesus Christ as of a real personality, human being, but they were called enlighteners, and they spoke of Christ as of a myth. And it was not just something that happened. They had a huge task. If there is no God, if personality exists just for a short while, for a short lapse of time, the personality lives just when they live on earth within the body, and then everything comes to an end, then what is the sense of life? Just to grab all you can grab here until it's too late, he grabs and tomorrow he dies, he gets something and then he's in prison. Today he's a president, tomorrow he is nobody. Just take a look at how everything turns over. Should we be so smart to understand that if indeed the personality has no eternal existence, what our values turn into our moral values, aesthetic values, as such? And in this connection, a very serious question was asked first by the enlighteners, who were not the natural scientists. There was a very weird question that has never ever existed: the science against religion. They knew perfectly well that all the medieval scientists were monks, Catholic monks, the clergy. They created the science. They argued. And even when Bruno was set on fire, it wasn't for his scientific ideas, but because he claimed himself to be the Son of God, because he, as a lot of other people were in conflict from the official point of view of those scientists who were protected by the official Catholic authorities. But the monks continued to move on the science. They were the members of the same church. It never existed, and they claimed science was against nature. And this argument turned out to be strong. What do I mean? It was very influential, and we see how it spread throughout Europe. And when it came to Russia, from 1917, it was announced solemnly that this viewpoint, atheism, is the scientific viewpoint. This is just ridiculous, that because from the viewpoint of science, our human knowledge at any moment of the historic existence are just a drop in the ocean of unknown, just a single drop. We also have to set an example. If I come and get just a cup of water from ocean, look into it and say, oh, it's ridiculous, not a single whale in this cup, not a single fish, let alone a whale. Our scientific knowledge is just a drop in the ocean of unknown. How can we make any conclusions about existence or non-existence of God? If we come at university in one room and see there is no one, and we say there is not a single person at this university, but maybe you should go into a different room and see 15,000 people at university, the science can't even say that there is no God, even if there was no God. Why? Because based on this drop of knowledge, I cannot judge on the contents of all the huge ocean that has no end. Is it so difficult to understand? Anyway, with the great insistence, this was pushed on. It is amazing. And in this way, implantation. And what did it come to? At Soviet times, maybe you don't remember, our generation does remember that even at hospitals it was written, medicine is against religion. How? In a very simple way, they open the skull of a person and find no soul in there. Once there was a small group that came to our monastery at Soviet times, and they started laughing. Who saw God? And one of our students answered to the group of people, who saw God? He said, did you see your own mind? Everybody burst out laughing. If you didn't see it, consequently, there is no mind in your head. So the viewpoint that denies the existence of God doesn't answer one question. What should an educated person do? An educated person, I underline this, in order to make sure there is no God. What should we do to make sure there is God? Oh, the church speaks on it all the time. So many things have been written and preached about it. There are many arguments in favor of God's existence. These arguments are scientific. And how can you answer the question, what should I do to make sure there is no God? I remember this question was asked to the head of the Institute of Scientific Atheism. The head of this institute came to our theologian academy, and I asked him to help me answer this question. I asked him this question, and I said, I can't answer this question. Could you please help me answer it? What should we do to make sure there is no God? Indeed, how can we make sure that in the nearest forest there is no wolf? We should search. Should we do this? Yes. Did we search? Yes. Did we find? No. Oh, there is a cunning animal. Maybe it hid even in this small sphere. And when we talk about the existence in general, about the space, the universe, can the science tell anything? The most it can say, I don't know. But many scientists of the past and present came to the faith in existence of God. And these convictions of theirs were based on the scientific fundament. Bech, our head of the Institute of a Brain, she claimed that having researched such an amazing organ as a brain of a human being, she no longer could imagine that this organ was created without the interference of the higher intelligence, because this organ is unbelievable regarding its capacities, its properties. So many scientists became religious, both in past and in present. Many clergy were scientists. Let's take an example of Voina Yasinetsky, a famous surgeon who received Stalin's prize at Soviet times. He became a bishop of the Crimea. Lucas Florensky is a universal scientist, a person who has universal knowledge, unbelievable scientist. Mendel, of course, in Soviet times, Mendelism was some negative naming of this direction. As many as you wish, there are many people who showed that their religious convictions and their scientific viewpoint couldn't be contradicted to religion. These are two different areas. We cannot say that as a kilometer is contradictory to a kilogram. It is ridiculous. So religion takes care of the soul. It touches heart of a person, not an organ. But when I say heart, I mean soul of a human being. It touches the life of a soul, but not the outer part of a life. And science takes care of this matter, and these are two different areas and two different ways of cognition. From 1990 in Dubno, there is an annual conference, Science, Philosophy, Religion. We can also there find there scientists of different directions, physicians, biologists, different people. There are the greatest philosophers, theologians of Russia, and every year they meet and discuss different topics. Topics where we check each other if there is any conflict between the areas, or on the contrary, it turns out that every sphere brings something into the understanding of a human being as such. One of the most important questions that were discussed at one of this conference and that deserves attention is we see what the scientific researchers come to when they're unlimited, absolutely unlimited penetration into the matter and the nuclear power was discovered, and we know what it is. It doesn't just have a positive side, it also has the negative usage of this powerful energy. Let's take a look at biology. Science gets into the genome of a human being and deciphers them one by one. What do we come to? We come to the state when it is possible, or it will soon be possible, to create a human being with the set properties. The person will not get born as usual, but there will be set properties and they will be evident. There will be a function of a human being. And in the long run, it will be possible to create some cyborg, and it will be difficult to understand whether it is a man or a machine. So the penetration into the world of psychics, into the human essence, what does it lead to? We ask this question, what should we do? Is it possible such unlimited researches, are they possible? And here we see the contradiction. The scientists say there can be no limits to researches, but we say there are facts. Don't you think that if it seems to me it was Oppenheimer who created the nuclear bomb. If this person who discovered the opportunities of the destructible force of the nuclear power, if he was a morally responsible person, wouldn't he have burned his discovery? He understood perfectly well that there always will be people who will use this energy for evil. The same when we come to biology, there is a great danger that the mankind faces. Artificial people, we even can't imagine what will happen. Religion, and when I say religion, I understand Christianity only, the Orthodox Christianity, first of all. It says the moral limitations in the scientific activity are essential, because if the process is unlimited in any way, the consequences can be severe for the mankind, and we see these consequences of the scientific and technical progress. We already see, you all see, watch, read, that the main tendency that threatens life on Earth is ecological crisis. So deserts are coming and spreading, waters are getting dirty, deforestation, chemical pollution, chemical products, we are poisoning ourselves. The mankind created a monster that we can't deal with. Why? What happened? How? We wanted to create something good. So what did we come to? Crisis. Crisis in capital letters. We face it. The crisis that can't be dealt with. Human being can't cope with this monster, of this scientific and technical monster that was born by the mankind. There's nothing we can do. We can't live without all of it. We reach such a level of development, progress, well-being. What if the electricity gets cut off? and what will our life and well-being turn into? Do you remember the great story, fact, maybe myth, it doesn't really matter, about Damocles' sword, when this poor Damocles envied the king, his power, his glory, and his riches. This king was very smart. And once he set Damocles on his throne, and above him, on a fine thread, he hung a sword above his neck. And it was a great feast, and Damocles was horrified. He sweated and got pale, and the king asked, "What's up?" Of course, what's up when at any moment this fine thread can just tear off and Damocles can die? This is a great thought. This great thought is amazingly expressed in this myth. Of course, every person is beneath this Damocles' sword. Nobody knows when this fine thread will tear off. Not so long ago, I received a call from my 42-year-old acquaintance. She was happy, and she said, suddenly, cancer was discovered in me, and it was a disaster for her. Is it so difficult to understand? If we are smart, we should think about it. If we do not think, then who are we? We talk about it at the conference Science, Religion, Philosophy. In particular, we speak of the scientific and progress, and we ask, where is it going? Not so long ago, in 1999, a great book was published by academic Moiseev, Should or Not the Mankind Exist? Is it meant to keep existing? The world disaster can happen with at such speed that no technical means will help us to prevent it. And this disaster can happen not somewhere in some indefinite future. No, he writes in the book, but maybe in the middle of the 21st century. Moiseev is one of the largest scientists of our Soviet and Russian science. He has a lot of discoveries, researches, great works. He was not a religious man. I wanted to get acquainted, but I didn't have time. So he wasn't religious. He was not a theologian. He wasn't a religious activist who wanted to frighten some poor people. No, he was a sober scientist who turned with these words to all the world community. He turned with these words, shouldn't we think about it? A vain, random gift. My life, what were you given for? And why were you condemned for the end? This is the difference between a human being and an animal, that a human being can think. They say it's easier to dream, but thinking is hard. It is true. But one of the most horrible diseases of our life is nothing else but our tendency to dream. We dream of some high, great, sunny, and beautiful events of life which have not come yet, and we stop thinking. This is terrible. the person is aimed at thinking and to be reasonable, to understand what we are doing, why, what we live for, what do we want. When we are told there is no soul, there is no God, and they say that we are just working for the benefit, for the future generation, these are empty words. Who thinks about the future generations to come? How many people think of it? And in particular, when the question is such that the human existence can stop in general, so academic Moiseev says that the mankind will come to an end as a biological species, and maybe this will help in the middle of the 21st century. Our dreams are something horrible because we forget about the real earthly problems. One of them is the question, what we live for. The Orthodox religion that has existed in our country for thousands of years, it's the second thousand of years now, this is something that deserves to be looked at. Were all of our ancestors crazy? Was Ломоносов such an idiot when he wrote that science and Bible, people try to make them contradict each other, and they do it on purpose? Is Orthodoxy nothing? What does it teach? What does it urge us to do? What are the values? Orthodoxy doesn't say don't eat, don't drink, don't get married, nothing of the kind. Eat, drink, and get married. But live according to your conscience. Why? Because there is God. There is eternal life, there is moral responsibility, and you will have to be accounted for all your actions on earth. Orthodoxy says that with the bodily death, all the moral and immoral of a person doesn't get destructed, because the soul consists of all of it. And then the responsibility comes. Which responsibility? Not in a way that God will call you and will try to put you in hell or somewhere. No, conscience, which awakens. Here we can just forget about it. But there, conscience gets opened. All that we did, and it opens in front of whom? In front of everybody. Who wants this? Who wants to face everybody with all our ideas, lies, deceptions? Who wants this? This is the most serious question of all. Every person for this reason should think about the sense of their life and what can wait for me after my life. There are two viewpoints. There is God, eternity, and sense, or there is nothing. No God, no eternity, no soul, and I'm an animal. And I want to say to our young listeners that for 70 years they have tried to persuade us that we are monkeys with computers in our heads. What does religion give? Here I brought a letter by Leo Tolstoy. It's more kind of a note after his visit to the Optin monastery. There was a conflict with him. What he says in Optin monastery for over 30 years, there was a paralyzed monk who could only move his left hand. The doctor said that he suffered a lot, but he not just didn't ever complain of his position, but he always prayed, smiled, and thanked God for his spark of life that was inside him. A lot of thousands of people visited him, and it's hard to imagine the good that was spread throughout the world by this person who couldn't move, by this inactive person. I think this person brought more good to the world than thousands and thousands of healthy people, imagining that in different institutions they serve to the world. This was written by Leo Tolstoy. And he had a conflict with the Russian Orthodox Church, but in his own manner he believed in God. Just take a look what he wrote about the meaning of the Orthodox faith, not just for a person themselves, but for the whole society. He did more, as he writes, I think this person brought more good to the world than thousands and thousands of officials. This notion of his just means a lot. Why? If it was written by someone, some bishop, clergyman, we could say that he's just praising his church. But Leo Tolstoy, and it's not just about him. This is a fact. If a person is saint, holy, there is a special atmosphere. It's not for nothing that lots of pilgrims went to holy people. Why? Because they received some spiritual energy, and thanks to it, people became better. We all want to make world better, but we should make ourselves better. There is no other way. The Christianity says to us, please try to become a little bit better. How? What is good? Gospel says what it is. Gospel. Don't look down at other people. Don't be proud. Don't be vain. Wish all the best to anybody. Don't harm other people. You shouldn't wish anything bad to anyone. Do act in the same way as you wish others to act. And it's not so much. Just if only people accepted these principles, what the society would be like? And if the society was like this, what is society? It is the solution from which the crystals appear. And what are these crystals? The authorities. They do not come from nowhere. The general state of the society creates the solution from where these people appear. They receive higher positions, and in such a way the well-being of the society is getting organized, all our social life is getting organized. Our modern writer Michael Antonov wrote, a person who doesn't need any more of the material goods, but he doesn't have the need for moral development. This is a dangerous person. This is so true. The person who takes care only of the material side of life and he doesn't think about his spiritual side is a scary person. He sets an example of Rasputin. His his story fire. We see that a person who has no moral principles but one, his material needs. This is a dangerous person. He turns into a monster who can do anything. This idea, this thought, that a person should live not just for the body, but he should upbring his soul, he should fight against the evil emotions that appear in his soul. This is in an incredibly important thought. We should take care about the outer side of our life, of course, but we should understand that the outer side is not the highest one, but we should take care of the outer side for the sake of the highest. Jesus Christ asks for daily bread in his prayer. It is good, but please, this bread should be gained according to the conscience, and our souls and our wishes should be clear and pure, and in this case everything will be well. I'm sorry, I just have 10 minutes to go. I was told you have questions. So if you have many questions indeed, then we should talk. Can I? Yes. Please tell me. I communicate to many people. I have many friends who do not deny God, but they deny church rituals. How should I talk to them? It is impossible to persuade them. I can't do this. And the other question is, can we pray for people of other convictions, of other faiths, of the religion? And how should I pray for them? I pray for many deceased people, so please. It seems to me that religion is an exceptional sphere of a person's life that demands absolute freedom of acceptance, no violence, no pressure. No way. If these people are kind, but for some reasons they do not accept all this church ritual life, then obviously it is too early. The time has not yet come. Maybe they will accept it later on, maybe not. But the main thing is conscience. If the person listens to their conscience, there is no doubt this person can turn out to be closer to Christ than a so-called Christian who doesn't live up to his faith. Because I can put on a billboard that I'm Orthodox, but it means nothing. I can lie to myself, to other people. So I repeatedly say, if they're not ready yet, it's okay. We can tell them, if they do not agree, we can wait, talk of weather, birds, it's okay. About prayers, Jesus Christ prayed when he was crucified for those people who crucified him, those anti-Christs who were against him, and he prayed for them. And we ask, can we pray for other people? Even if this person doesn't believe in God, so from the spiritual point of view, he has some drawback, some inner disease. He doesn't understand something, but who a mother takes more care of a healthy or an ill child? Of course, of an ill child. So we should pray more for those people who do not believe in God. We should pray more for people of other religions. We should pray for everyone, because the fundamental Christian law, this is the law of essence, is that God is love. It's not just God has love. These are different things. God is a creature who has love. No, love is the fundamental law of the human existence. If you want to be happy, try not to break this law. Try to do everything for everybody as much as it is possible. This is a law. In the same way as you cannot break some physical laws jumping out of windows, in the same way we cannot break the law of love if we want to be happy. Christianity tells us about this. Christ said that God is love, and God is like a sun who shines not just on righteous people, but it shines for everyone, and it rains for everyone, not just for the righteous people. So Christianity discovered this. All the people thought that God is a king who just gives awards to some people and punishes the rest of them. But this is not true. So God is love, and consequently, love is the main fundamental law of our life. Who wants to be happy should do their best to show love to other people, and not just to our friends. And I can tell even more, if you dislike someone, if he is far away from us in terms of their convictions, we should pay more attention to them. Conscience. Doesn't it depend on family and society? If it comes from God, why wasn't it given to everyone from God? We shouldn't confuse two things. The conscience as a fact, this feeling as a property. Conscience is a property, everybody has it, but the contents is different. For example, now we have the Lent, and there is a Passion Week of strict fasting of the Lent, and if a Christian goes on Passion Friday to a restaurant and eats a lot of, veal or something, the Christian will suffer a lot. But if a person doesn't believe in God, they break nothing, they violate nothing if they go to a restaurant on Passion Friday, because the contents of conscience can be different. But it is better for a person to have the most fulfilling conscience possible. So Christianity gives us the elements to fill our conscience and for the person to become pure. How happy we are when we see some amazing person. This is a kind person. He is so good that we are so happy when we talk to this person. We can visit this person. When we see it, we feel it, we understand it. It is just beauty. In Christianity, God is called the primary beauty. He is the source of beauty. Indeed, sanctity, holiness, the pureness of thoughts, intentions, makes a person holy, saint. And there is nothing more beautiful in this world. There is nothing more beautiful in the world than a conscious, righteous person. And of course, we admire such people. And everybody should strive to this, should aspire to this. Sometimes they say Christianity is something evil, they can do this and that. It is just senseless. Of course, you cannot steal. You should share, not steal. Is it so bad? So conscience is a very good thing, and this is a property of a human being, but the contents of a conscience can be different. In some religions, Don't go to bed. You went to bed, you should keep a sword under your pillow until you take revenge on someone. You should seek means to take revenge on someone. This is a religious demand. But if this person does something bad to someone, I think this person does not sin when they take revenge. Why? Because they acted according to their conscience. This is an extreme example. But if he kills just because he envies someone or he dislikes someone, this is a sin. A sin is a wound. This is a wound that when a person hurts themselves, God is impassionate, and when I drink hard, who do I harm? When I take drugs, who do I harm? When I steal, and so on, when I hate. Doctors say, please, don't just get too overexcited because it is dangerous for your heart, for your vascular system. So everything that Christianity calls a sin, this is the harm that person causes to themselves. When I judge someone, but by this I hurt myself. He doesn't care that I judge him. But I am infuriated. Who suffers? I do. I envy. Who suffers? I do. He doesn't care. And I suffer. So every sin is a wound. And Christianity warns, don't sin. Why do you hurt yourself? Why do you walk barefoot on broken glass? What are you doing it for? Then you breathe in the polluted air. Why? What are you doing? Hear what a sin. And not just some abstract law. God thought, well, I should ban these creatures on these two-legged creatures. I should ban them from doing this and that. This is ridiculous. So conscience is a great thing. Does a person have a destiny or do they have a choice? Christianity says that to a huge extent we create our destiny ourselves. We create our destiny ourselves. I shouldn't drink too much. We create our destiny ourselves. They say, don't do it. If you do it, something bad will happen. And they say, leave me alone, and then, what? Oh, yes. To a large extent, we are the greatest of our destiny. Let's go into some theologian discussions. To a large extent, we are defined by the natural properties that we are born with. Someone is born greedy or is born a liar. And they ask him, why are you lying? And he says, I can't do otherwise. Is it his destiny? Nobody believes him. At work, he's just fired. So, to a very large extent, we are the greatest of our destiny. But to some extent, our destiny is defined by some properties we are born with. Of course, both. We study economics and we see what is happening in society. There are different tendencies. I would like you to answer the following. The proliferation. Who lives well now in Russia? I see that many churches are being built, many monasteries are being built. I don't think it is too bad, but we have a crisis that reminds of itself everywhere, and it is difficult to understand why so many churches are being built in times of crisis. As an economist, and all of you know the following thing. The result is never 100%. Never. So, never. Efficiency is never 100%. It is very different. And in church, the law is the same. So not everything the church does is perfect. There are always some mistakes. There are some passions, some mistakes, some goals that shouldn't be there. Let's remember what happened in Russia in the end of the 15th century. One third of all earth belonged. Of all the territory belonged to the monastery. It's absurd. The monks, who should have no properties, had one third of all the territory. And it didn't happen because they were greedy. It happened because every old person who died just bequeathed everything they had to the monastery, for the monastery to pray for them. And for monasteries it is very difficult, because people look at it and they say, what is it? And of course, everybody is human, and as a result we see in church history many facts and cases that we can just deeply regret. We shouldn't just be amazed. Nothing is different. On the one hand, we should build churches. People have nowhere to pray. People ask for churches, for a small church at least. This is necessary, yes? On the other hand, sometimes we try to decorate our churches, over-decorate. We should decorate it with gold. I am personally against it. Why should we decorate churches with gold? It should be modest, neat, but it is difficult to press things. I should have a more beautiful church than some other church. There are many young priests, and young priests, they are very much like this. They are very competitive. So what is going on? Just, we shouldn't look at church as something ideal. Ideal holiness never existed in church, because church is a hospital and not a resort. And who do we find at hospital? Healthy people? No. You think a Christian, and he's a Christian, and he does this or that. He is at hospital. He uses a crutch. He does whatever he can. This is it. Church is a hospital. Christianity is somewhere people can come and seek for means to get rid of envy. Do you remember Dante? He said that envy was the worst sin ever found in people. How can we get rid of envy? It is so difficult. But church says you should fight, you should keep trying. But for a person who doesn't believe in God, I do steal, so what? I do envy, so what? But a Christian will not say so. You shouldn't hurt yourself, because the result will be disastrous. So the situation is as such. What do you think about Islam. Recently, I published an article in a magazine,
National Control.
I had a large interview, and in two magazines they published it. The headline of the first of it is Islam is the closest religion to Christianity, is the headline of the interview. Islam is the closest religion to Christianity. In Russian Empire, it was such a friendship of Muslim and Christian people. And then the Roman thought divide and have power over. So it was done intentionally, and now it is not so much of a friendship, but when we are together, we are the most powerful, and we should be together. And let's take a look at what is going on in Ukraine. They are trying to divide. So everywhere you see that there is some contradiction being implemented. But there is, you should know there is devil. You can read this interview in the magazine National Control, and you will know the answer to the question. What is your opinion on meditation and oriental practices? We should take into account two questions. The first question is the question if we can, do we have the right to say that this or that religion is true? This is the first question. I cannot answer it right now. I can just speak on it in a few words, that I have the whole course of lectures in our monastery. The course is devoted to the objective arguments in favor of the origin of Christianity, and this origin is not earthly. Christianity comes from God. There are objective arguments that testify in favor of the divine origin of Christianity. It is the whole course of lectures. And indeed, if you turn to other religions, you will see a more difficult situation there. In many religions, there are no arguments. In particular, when we come to some oriental religions, this question about meditation, we can say it is simply a practice that was formed throughout epochs and centuries, a practice which should be regarded in the following way. What is the purpose of it? What does it give to a person? And doesn't it mislead a person? Mislead it from the real sense of life. Vivekananda, a famous pupil of Ramakrishna, maybe you know, he's a famous one. He traveled throughout Europe, United States, participated in the world religious congresses. He was a famous yogi. He died, having reached 40 years. His colleagues said he didn't want to come out of the state of samadhi. He didn't want, he couldn't. This meditation is just the beginning, but in the long run, all the oriental practices lead to reaching the state of ecstasy, and ecstasy. Accumulates all the powers of a person into one single point, all the powers, and a person can't last long. Vivekananda passed away. What is the sense of life? And this Oriental practices, what does he speak of? What is the ideal, as they say? They say, A person's soul is a kind of a salt doll that in the long run dissolves in the eternal ocean of Brahma. This is the same atheism. There is no personality. Me, I will not exist anymore. I will get dissolved. So what is the sense of it? I will no longer exist. It is interesting for me when I can contemplate something, when I can get the results of my activities. But if I dissolve in an internal ocean of Brahma, so what is in it for me? So we should be very careful with the meditation. It is something we should not practice. The orthodox practice is different. We just pray and say the words of a Jesus' prayer. We should pray more, many times, but very attentively. And in this case, there will be no negative results. Why does it mean, why do they say that being a Christian means being a human being in the essential meaning of this word? Let's take a look. All the time, what do the people dream of? What is the ideal? Who is an ideal person? Can you describe what are the properties of an ideal person? And here it goes. There are some book characters, Idiot by Dostoevsky. They tried to create this person, ideal person. And there are some images, characters are being created, literature characters, philosophic characters, but Christianity is different. It gives a real character, Jesus Christ, a real ideal person, and it urges people to try to be like Jesus Christ. He is a normal person. If we try to describe it, let's read the Gospel, or maybe Apostle Paul. What is the fruit of the spiritual life? It is joy, patience, mercy, abstinence, meekness, humility. When someone hits me, I shouldn't hit them twice. So these are the properties: honesty, love. There is the 13th chapter of Apostle Paul. He says there is an anthem of love. If I speak different languages, human and angelic, but I have no love, I am nothing. If I give away all I possess, and I give my body, and it will be burnt, but I have no love, there is no use for me in it. Do you hear? Can you hear it? And so on. Here is the real principle. Here is an ideal person, but to reach this state of love, the correct Christian life is essential. The correct Christian life. What is a correct Christian life? I will say in a few words. We should live according to our conscience, and we shouldn't do to other people what we wouldn't like them to do to us. You haven't said a word about the negative points in religion. Don't you think that religion is more dangerous than atheism, because a fanatic is more dangerous than a non-believer? A great question, thank you very much. I will tell you, there is not a single good thing that cannot be spoiled. Fanatism in religion is a terrible thing, is one of the most terrible perversions of religion. It is horrible. There is conviction and there is fanatism. These are two different things. There were people who died for what they believed in, but a fanatic always hates everybody who thinks otherwise than them. Convictions, Christian convictions, are open with love for everybody else, but a Christian fanatic hates everybody who acts of things otherwise than themselves. And these perversions are absolutely possible as anywhere else. But we should judge everything according to the aim of it. And Christianity aims at making a person holy and saint. By the way, all the Russian education approximately up to the 16th century, to 16th century, had an aim to make a person better, not just to give information, the same thing we can do to a computer, but to make a person better. There was a principle that a good person, you can give them any position, even if there are some ruins, he will make a castle out of it, but a terrible person will make ruins out of a castle. I read in a magazine that businessmen should take into account that people with higher education, according to statistics, violate the rules and the law of the company 10 times more often than those with a secondary education. How should we understand it? I heard a story. One person bought a very expensive car, put on it 3 locks, locked it in a garage, came out in the morning, the garage was locked, he unlocked it and there was no car. And the first thing he was impressed with, not that he lost a car or something, how did they manage to do it technically? Not a single noise. And the garage was locked, and there was no car. So businessmen should pay attention. You see, science is a good thing, but what we can turn it into a means of deception, stealing, robbery, and so on. Religion is the same, of course. Okay? Everybody's tired, right? Okay, thank you for your patience very much. Thank you.